Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together.
Hi, Aideen. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for accepting my invitation to the podcast. This podcast, Humans in AI, and we are very happy to have you here. It's hosted by AI Frontier Network, by me, Flo. Okay, great. So let's start.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Let's start from the beginning, okay? Because I know that you've got a long journey in all your... have so many things to talk about, but let's start from the beginning of everything. You are right now doing something related with education, edtech, and gaming, and something very super exciting. How did it happen? So my question is, how do you, from all the things that you've done, and you've worked in some other companies and done like different expertise, so why did you decide to focus on education? What do you want to change for education, basically?
Yeah. I think I identified the problem when I entered my early professional life. It was only then when I became interested in topics like history, science, and literature. Whereas the foundational years of learning, the first 13 years of my learning, my education, somehow the teachers failed to ignite any interest or curiosity in these topics. And it's not that I was privileged enough to be born in a family who could send me to one of the better private schools in my country. Yet somehow I was not engaged in the classroom. And I realized that this was not a problem unique to me. I spoke to a lot of my friends then, and they had experienced something very similar. I went back to my school after many years to see if students were still experiencing what I did. And to my surprise, they did. Nothing much had changed. And as I researched on this subject, I realized that this is not my school's problem or the Indian education system problem. It's the global education system problem. The education system which most of us have been exposed to is a 200-year-old system. It was designed to get human beings ready for the Industrial Revolution, where hierarchy, order, all those things mattered. The last 50 years, the world has dramatically changed, and the education system has just not kept pace with the change. Like in today's day and age, you and I could learn from someone 10 years older as well as someone 10 years younger. But our classroom systems are not designed like that. You tend to learn by topics you're passionate about, but our classroom systems, by and large, in the world do not reflect that. So I felt it's a big global problem to solve, felt very passionate about it. And then, almost 10 years ago, since I ended up being a sports person, my love for sports expanded to all kinds of games. So I felt that if learning could be made into a game, then maybe kids would not experience what I did. So that was the simple premise of getting into educational gaming. And then, of course, from then on, there was a journey of building skills and learning from failures.
That I found it very interesting because as well as this podcast, Humans in AI, like I feel like you focus a lot on this human part of, when in this case, the kids, right? Like they will become adults at some point. So I found it very relevant, the job you're doing, because you basically you are educating the future generation. I read as well that you've done something like related with AI and tech. So how much that helped like for... in education, like obviously you're now doing this mix between the tech and education and gaming, so you make the education more like gamifier, like kind of like easier for the kids to be kids, but at the same time learn not in the traditional way, but in the way that you do, which is I found it very interesting way, and I really like it. So you have kind of...
Thanks.
How do you think that the technology or AI helps in this case with this your perspective to create or shape the education, the future education?
Yeah, I think after the internet and maybe the smartphone, AI is like the single biggest technology that has come to our being, which I believe would probably have the single largest impact on education. Reason being, AI, the way it's been built, it can really solve a lot of fundamental problems in education. For example, every child is unique and has his or her own unique way to learn things. AI allows for personalization so that every child can actually learn based on their individual needs. It's much more inclusive. And there's not been any technology in recent times which is as pathbreaking to make learning personalized and inclusive. Then there's so many other aspects of AI which can help children really learn. So, for example, there is conversational AI as well, where a child can talk to AI as a friend to learn from those conversations without having the fear of being judged, which is more relevant when a child talks to a teacher or another human being, right? So those fears can go away when you talk to conversational AI. And then one of the big problems in our education system is how much time teachers, educators spend on student assessment. And again, there is no better grader than AI, because AI has understands all types of languages and can actually grade student outcomes and whatever assignments students submit in the classroom, saving a lot of time for teachers to actually bring humanness and attention to kids who need the attention. And then finally, more and more children are being diagnosed being neurodivergent. I think even our own data shows that almost one out of every four child is neurodivergent, having different types of learning needs. It could be ADHD, it could be ASD, it could be dyslexia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia. There's so many unique places where children might need an extra hand, and this is where AI can come in and actually understand, identify those needs, and then cater to that child's need at her own pace. I'm extremely excited. I think it's a pivotal time in our world where this technology can definitely have a very positive impact on education. There are certain considerations we still need to keep in mind when it comes to AI, like safeguards. There has to be a regulatory framework, especially when it comes to children interacting with AI. You cannot just not have regulation there. It needs to be extremely transparent so educators and parents can actually trust whatever AI tool a child has access to. It has to be safe. For every great technologies, there are enough black sheeps who are misusing the technology, right? So they need to be like taken care of, like, so that kids are protected and safe. And then I think there has to be a lot of training effort done on the educators and the teachers to use the AI as their executive assistant, for lack of any other word. Like, the AI can be their tool to actually help provide individual guidance to their students. So yeah, I'm extremely excited, but at the same time, lots has to be done before you allow kids to be using AI freely.
Yeah, I think that every day, like day by day, it's AI, it's more and more accepted in the society as well. Like even my mother, she's pretty old and she's using AI, so it's
Oh
interesting how the
wow,
kids. So
super.
yeah,
She's using it
that's so
for? What
funny.
is she using it for?
She's using it for Anna, but I know that she uses it. Like sometimes she just
Okay.
said, oh, I'm just ask ChatGPT for that. So I don't know what example, but I know that every single body. I think that, yeah, so I kind of found it very interesting how it's. And I feel like if kids, I think it's important to teach the kids to how to use it in the right way. So I think that's a very relevant job that you're doing right now for that. So
Thank you.
I also read that you get a lot of awards for the kids for your Skiddos company. So how was this kind of awards for? Do you have any story that you would like to share about a child or a parent who, I don't know, that really not touch you, but maybe yes, that really reshape your thinking about education as well and
Heard
of what you are
you.
doing.
Sorry.
Yeah, sure. Oh, can you hear me? Sorry.
And I'm back. I think I had an internet issue. Now I'm back. Can
Okay,
you
do
say
you
that
want me to
again?
repeat? Yes, sure,
I missed that
100%. And I'm
completely.
going to say it even better. So basically, I read that you've got a lot of awards for your good job with your company, Skiddo. So do you have any experience or story that you would like to share with us about a child or parent who did or say something that really kind of reshaped way to think about education and also feel proud of your job to keep, because well, startups are not easy, right? So it's to keep pushing that. And I think that the best reward, apart the award that you received, it's as well the feedback of the community that you are fulfilling.
Yeah, I think the awards like the ones we've won, obviously it's great to get recognized by experts, people who judge the quality of a product. It's very rewarding for me as an entrepreneur to get all of those awards. But I think what really, for me personally, what a reward is when I look at a child, you kiddos, and smile and laugh and be active and learn something. I think that is the single biggest thing which kind of drives me every day to give my 100%. And then when I speak to parents, they share their stories about how their child is learning and having fun, and they're surprised that the two can coexist. Yeah, there's nothing more rewarding than looking at the kids and hearing these stories from parents. I think that's a bigger reward for me and a bigger motivator than a award from a community.
Yes, so this is basically, I guess, is why you are doing this still, right? Because it's the startup life is rarely smooth. It's very hard. It's very challenging. So, yeah, I think that's always have to, good to have a feedback like that.
It's
So,
been very hard for me. It's been one of the most emotionally draining yet most rewarding experience in my life, I think. I didn't make it easier, to be honest. Like, I decided to start a software company without having any engineering background or having a technical co-founder. Then I decided to leave my country to come to a completely new country, Denmark, where I had zero network. And then I decided to get into two industries which had no experience, education and gaming. So I really made it much harder for me to succeed. But I think when I look back at this and see where we are, I think it's very rewarding. Like, I would not change anything. And then
wow,
the impact we
well,
have on kids, I think it's very rewarding.
yeah, that's very interesting that you didn't actually. I checked a little bit of your expertise, and you didn't really have a lot of engineering or background. Actually, it's a good point that yeah, it's good that you mentioned it. You work across a lot of industries, right? Like you are also a salesperson, product manager, like a lot of things that nothing related with tech, actually. So that's very interesting. And so you work for telecom, media, FMCJ, and G, sorry, no J. How working on those industries and those companies help you to become an entrepreneur today? You're a CEO of a very, very relevant in the e-learning platform like field. So how did it help you, or it just came from somewhere?
I think again, there was a bit of luck involved, because in all the industry, the three industries you mentioned, media, telecom, FMCG, I was assigned projects where it was either a new product launch or a new business launch. And I was an integral part of the launch process. And this enabled me to understand how you launch a new product or launch a new business. And again, maybe luck, maybe hard work or intelligence. All the products and businesses I had launched with these companies, industries were successful. And that kind of gave me the confidence that, okay, I'm basically an intrapreneur. Like, inside an organization, I'm building a new system, a new business. I could probably do that for myself if I identify a problem which I'm passionate to solve. So it was really a confidence booster. Of course, when you work with large companies, you have access to resources and capital, which makes it easier, increases your chances of success of a product launch or a business launch. You don't have that luxury necessary when you start your own thing from scratch. But the confidence I gained from launching those businesses and products really helped me in setting up Skiddos for success.
Yeah, that's very relevant in all this. Like I find it like when you start something, it's sometimes you think that it comes from nowhere and you just started, right? And then you look back and it makes sense. It's like you've been preparing yourself unconsciously or consciously to become the person or the person and the professional you are now today,
True.
being an entrepreneur, like you were not in the beginning. So I found it very interesting. Now having all those that background and knowing all that story and the stories, the experiences that you've got from all your past experiences, what would you tell to yourself now if you have to start again with the with all knowing all these things you know about already your entrepreneurship journey? If you have to start again and build again the skills, what would you say? What would you tell to yourself? What is the advice that you would tell to yourself, let's say?
You learn from your mistakes, right? So if I were to do things from scratch, I would probably find myself a technical co-founder in the beginning. I think that would have been a big factor in helping achieve success faster because I spent a lot of time understanding technology myself. Number two would be surrounded with people who are, ensure consciously that you surround with people who are smarter than you, because in the beginning, I think I overlooked this part, both in terms of the initial team as well as in terms of mentors. I never proactively reached out to mentors who were probably successful entrepreneurs and part of the industry you could learn from. So I would have definitely spent more time with getting the right people and right mentors on board. And the third and the most important fact, which now I follow as a principle, is really spend time with your end user, your customer, whoever you are, the reason why you exist as a company. The more time you spend as a founder with your end user, end customer, that is your single biggest chance of understanding the problem you're trying to solve and your chance of succeeding in creating something of value.
I love that advice. Like spending time with the with people that make your company exist. This is such an important thing that I think that most of the time founders we forgot about that.
Yeah, I
Maybe
think
like
rarely most people forget about it. Think that's
yeah.
or make a lot of assumptions, which customers, when you spend time with customers, most assumptions will fail.
100%. Like it's like you fall in love with your product or what your goal or you want to achieve, and that's it. And then you talk with your customers, and there's no a lie. It's not a lie. What's going
Yeah,
on? It's
exactly.
not working. That's a very good advice. I know that you are also a mentor and investor. I guess that you talk a lot with founders, other founders. Do you, with any of them, have you, did they remind you to yourself sometimes their experience as well? Or it's more, yeah.
I think it's a two-way exchange. So I think the founders I mentor, the number one contribution from my side is that I stop them from making some mistakes which maybe I made and learned from that. So that reduces their time to success or cost of actually doing something which doesn't make sense. And then there's certain basics which I think a lot of first-time founders at least might not understand, like something which I said earlier, that spend time with your customer, validate all your assumptions. A lot of first-time founders do not realize how important that is. So one of my advice to all the founders I work with is to really spend time with the customer to understand the problem. And then, of course, I also learn a lot. It's a two-way exchange. I learn from young founders how they hack resources or tools to build faster, ship faster, or make things faster or cheaper. Yeah, I think it's part of giving back and also learning from younger founders.
Yeah, I think that the beauty about mentorship is it's a both ways win-win. Like you teach, but when you're teaching, you are learning as well. Like you're learning about yourself, basically. What you preach sometimes it's easier to learn from what we say about from what we say than from like we think that is like we're supposed to do ourselves first. We just say and then, oh, actually, I'm saying to that person that, but actually, I should do that as well. But I think it's easier to say from outside. So.
True.
Well, since as you said in the beginning that you're coming from India, right? So you're coming from India and then you went to Denmark to build your EdTech company, right? So how have these different worlds shaped the way you think about the future of e-learning? I know it's a big difference, I think Europe and India in the tech ways as well.
True. Yeah, I think I'm lucky that I experienced, I would say, three different education systems, starting with India. So the Indian education system, or I would say even the Asian education system, it really helps individuals understand the importance of work ethics, hard work, right? At the same time, because that's how Asian parents are built, they make sure that the kids are working hard, reaching the top, getting the best grades, being the top of the class. But at the same time, The Asian education system is a lot to do with memorization and less of practical and real life learning. So that's like the things which the Asian education system can improve. And then I did a bit of my master's also in the US, where I got exposed to more practical learning, where people are learning from each other, from their practical experiences, which was much different from what I had experienced in India. And then the Nordic or the Danish education system has a lot of play in it. I think kids are encouraged to spend a lot more time learning through play, learning through real life scenarios, which is, I think, the best way to learn, where kids are having fun through play and also understanding the environment around them and how they can learn by just spending time with the environment and real world cases. So I think all of these experiences have really given me that broader understanding of what is utopian education system, which it doesn't exist right now, but I think the Nordics are really, I would say, way ahead than most of the other countries in moving in that direction. And now with AI technology, what we discussed before coming in, I think the blend of both the Nordic way of education and AI technology can actually be pathbreaking in education.
Yeah, I really like the Nordic education too. It's very interesting, actually, very different, but it's very interesting too. So, what you are also an investor. So, as an investor with the knowledge and experience that you have, what do you focus on people? Do you focus more on their kind of soft skills or hard skills or a mix, or what is your main? What is the main thing that you focus on when you are going to invest? I guess that you invest obviously in tech, I mean in tech and education.
Yeah, I think the industries I'm passionate about, obviously, education and kids, I think, very important aspect of the world. If you can make education better, the world will have a brighter future. Kids, obviously, are in a very important aspect of our world because they are the ones who are going to lead the world in the future. So enabling them with toolkits and knowledge and skills, which will really help them thrive in a world which is the future, which is definitely bound to be very uncertain, have a lot of changes where technologies will change rapidly and adults will have to be having the skill set to adapt in that fast change. So kids' education are two places where I'm passionate about. Then I really want to like focus on solving problems in healthcare because I think that is also a very important aspect of human life, both old age as well as normal adult life. And then finally, another sector which I am personally passionate about is agriculture, because I think that if you look at the Maslow's need hierarchy, right, food, health is like the two most important parts of being human. And I think a large part of the world has not solved that or it doesn't have equal access to that. Yeah, those are areas where I would like to focus my time, my energy, and even capital.
Yeah, that's actually the agriculture. I'm more and more famous billionaires. They are investing on build, yeah, in having their own food. Like they don't have to go to supermarket and anything. So that's, I think it's a very good idea though. You know that as all your startup experience, it's been challenging as well. It is the startup life, but what keeps you going on the hard days? Like how do you keep pushing? Do you have any tricks, hacks, or something to share with the audience that we can just take it?
I think the number one reason is being really passionate about the problem you're trying to solve, right? So our mission itself is the single biggest driver for me to get up every day in the morning and give my 100%. I think if I can play even a small role in helping the younger generation to become really resilient in the future, I will be very happy looking back at my life. So I think that is the biggest thing which kind of drives me. Then I think something which is very personal to me, I ended up being a sports person, and that really built my character in terms of being perseverant and not giving up. I don't like giving up very easily. I don't like losing. I'm very competitive as well. I think that also kind of pushes me to give my best and try to find solutions to any problem which I might face. And then usually when problems come, I think I go back to first principle thinking, just going over all the assumptions of the problem, to break it down and then just use logic to solve the problem. And invariably, I've seen that if you do that, you end up coming up with a good optimum solution.
Beautiful. By the way, why skittles?
You mean the name?
Yes. Yeah, sorry. I didn't clarify that.
So it's a pun on smart kiddos. So smart, S stands for smart and then kiddos, because a lot of adults call kids like kiddos, hey kiddo. So it's like smart kiddos.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I just kind of was reading your shirt and was like, oh, I should
Oh
ask this question. For sure. I
yeah.
was reading your shirt. I was like, I didn't even ask this question. Okay. Talking about leadership, I think leadership is very important as a mentor, as a founder of e-learning platform. So how has your leadership style evolved since you started Skittles?
Yeah, I think one of the things I've learned over the years is like, then in order to build a high performance culture, you need to create a safe environment for giving and receiving feedback. And inherently, giving feedback is one of the hardest things humans have to go through, because you are always afraid of hurting the other person's feelings. I was guilty of that for a large part of the initial years of running the company. And I realized that was actually being counterproductive and actually building a low performance culture where average or below average performers were getting recognized. And I realized the way to switch this is, in order to create a safe space, you look at giving feedback from the mindset of actually helping the individual improve to create the better, best version of that individual. When you look at feedback from that point of view, then you actually create that safe environment to give and receive feedback. And that has really helped me build Skittles into a very high performance culture. And of course, you need to be, as a leader, as someone who's setting the example, you need to lead by being authentic. So if you believe in giving and receiving feedback, then you need to make sure that you are also open to getting feedback and you create a safe environment for your colleagues to give you feedback. Yeah, I think that's like the single biggest change I made into my leadership, that speak up and give feedback respectfully to whoever deserves to get that feedback.
So giving feedback is very difficult, as you said. But is there a moment where you realize that you have to change the way you lead? Like you said, okay, no, there's something wrong here. I have to change this way.
Yeah, this was it. I think earlier I used to hesitate. I wanted to give the feedback that, okay, you could do better, for example, or you have not put in the effort which the task required. But I used to hesitate because I was afraid of hurting that person's feeling. Now I just stopped doing that. If I know that someone has not put in their effort or could do better because I understand the individual skill sets and competencies, I will just tell that person that you could do so much better than what you have just done. And I think that kind of you, as long as you back it up with reason, most people, most professionals will understand that and respect you for that.
Yeah, I think it's a very, I think that there's a lot of, I think it's good problem that you had that you hesitate, because most of the people would just say, no, this is, I'm the boss here and you have to do what I want to do. So,
No, I think that's not constructive feedback, right? It's not about one opinion versus the other. It's about how you approach the problem. The conversation should be about your approach to the problem. That's where usually there is a gap, where as a leader, you might believe that the person has not put in the thought behind it, and you talk about the different possible approaches in the conversation and say that why were you not able to think of these approaches? And then you still let the person figure out which approach is best for solving that task. So you still give them that freedom rather than saying, I'm saying so follow it.
yeah, I like that you think that way because I agree with you too. But yeah, I wanted to say, like, most of the people that aren't the boss, I know what you have to do, which is the wrong way. I think so too.
Yeah, that's not going to give the best results. I don't think that would give the best results.
So I've got a last question, a few two last questions for you. If you are not doing Skittles right now, what would you be doing now?
Oh wow. I would probably take up a problem in the industries I spoke to you about earlier, which I'm passionate about, whether it's health or agriculture, food. I think those two are very important industries. So I'll try to identify a problem and then go solve it. Yeah. If I had to be an entrepreneur, otherwise I would. If I had to turn back time, I would probably then take sports more seriously and end up being a sports person. But now I think I'm too old for that.
I don't think you're never too old for anything, to be honest.
No, but I would want to be in my prime and competing. Right now, I'll be competing in the old age bracket. So,
Yeah, I got that. Would you like to share anything else that we haven't touched or we haven't talked about? Would you like
no,
to
I think
share
your
any
question.
story, any fun thing that you would like to share?
Yeah, I think the things I learn, kids surprise me all the time. I think if you want to understand hacking any software, any piece of content, go to a child, go to a 5, 6, 7 year old, because they have done it. Adults can't think like that. I'll give an example, which I was totally shocked about a year ago. I'd gone to my friend's place. He has 3 boys, 4 to 7 year olds, and they were watching YouTube on their smart TV. And I was asking them, aren't you kids always harassed by all these ads which keep coming in between your content? And they're like, no, don't you know how you can block them? I'm like, no, I had no idea you could block ads on YouTube. And they're like, oh, look at, they took the remote and they show me this small information button where apparently YouTube allowed the user to say, I don't want to watch this ad and go back to the content without watching any ad. I know that this is a year ago. Now I know a few months ago, Google figured this out that a lot of users were doing this, especially kids. And I think now it's not allowed. But the fact that the kids figured out, like a 4 year old figured out how to use a remote of a smart TV, explore the menu, and figure out that you can actually stop ads is wow. This is amazing how kids can hack into everything.
I believe the kids are the smartest people in the world,
Yes,
to be honest.
I
So,
agree.
yeah. Okay, Adi, I'm just calling you Adi as you were my friend for all of my life, but I love it. Your full name is Aditya, right? But yeah.
Yes.
So it was great meeting you and great interview, great conversation. I really enjoyed it very much. I love the topic. I really believe in what you are doing on the future of the kids. Kids are the future and the future in everything. They are as well, how they use technology, AI, how they, if we let them be, they probably, we could learn way more as adults from them that they can learn from us. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Flo. It was a really good conversation. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be part of this conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human. One story at a time. See you in the next episode.